Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 107 of the Ron and Brian podcast. I am Ron, as always, joined by a man who has spent many a night in the Rambles in Central Park, Brian. Brian, how are you, my friend?
I am doing splendid. As somebody with the COVID antibodies flowing through my blood, I realized that with great power comes great responsibility.
Very true.
And I feel when I'm walking the streets, I need to set an example for those that are living in fear, to let them know that, you know, that there is a life to be had on the other side of this coronavirus, whether you are alive or dead. I do believe in reincarnation, but I think it's important that others see me and say, how can I be like him?
Excellent. You know, we're going to talk more about this Amy Cooper story a little bit later, but it has really raised a question that has been on a lot of people's minds over the years. Are they the Rambles or the Brambles in Central Park? Because George Takei always refers to them as the Brambles when he talks about going out to have like a gay hookup in Central Park. He'd be like, yes, I was in the Brambles looking for a friend. Oh my.
Were you asking an answer? Was that a legitimate question?
It's a legitimate question.
I have no idea. I have no idea.
All right, screw you then.
I heard it as the Brambles.
Yeah, as did I, but apparently it's the Rambles, so who knew? All right, in the meantime, let's have a drink. We'll start it off with the very controversial Drink of the Week new theme.
Drink of the Week.
The listenership really seems to be divided as to whether they like it or not, but we're going to stick with it for a while. Maybe I'll come up with a third one and we can have a little competition. Brian, what are you drinking this week?
Now, when you say that we're divided, as in the listeners, do you really mean yourself?
I prefer the new one to the old one. The old one was good for a period of time. I thought it was a little long. I thought it was a little unnecessary at times. I think this is a little bit more, kind of gets you right to the drinking.
All right. Excellent. What am I drinking this week, you ask? I am drinking a Dogfish Head 90-Minute Imperial IPA.
The Imperial
IPA. I'm going fancy
IPA.
Here. Now, what few people will know about, look at the color of this. This is such a beautiful color. Hold on first.
Have a sip. Yeah, I was going to say, what makes it an Imperial IPA compared to the regular 90-Minute IPA?
I will let you look that up on Beer Advocate. But what is special about this beer is that I was introduced to it on the Amtrak Acela train going between New York and Boston. It's the only, I would say, craft beer, meaning non-Bud Light or Coors Light or some shit that they serve on the Acela. But this was the only like special fancy beer they sold. So I used to knock out about four of them like as soon as we pulled out of Penn Station, and I would just sleep for the ride up.
That's
very fond memories of this beer.
All right. So this week I went to the beer fridge, broke out something from Destination Unknown Beer Company out in Bayshore, New York. This is their Abuse of Stout. It is a cinnamon bun imperial stout with honey, cinnamon, vanilla, demerara sugar, and everyone's favorite, lactose.
God, what is with you and the lactose?
I don't know.
It's literally...
This is clocking in at a solid 12%, so it's going to be a good show after I put this down.
All right, let's see. He takes a sip.
I get the sweetness. I'm not going to lie. I don't get cinnamon bun. I just get like kind of a sweet stout, which is fine. I like a sweet stout every now and then. I know you like a sweet stout every now and then, my friend. But I'm not getting... All right, I am getting a little bit of the cinnamon notes at the end there. So, but a good beer, nonetheless. And at 12%, it's going to treat me right. No question about it. Anything else?
Which
on
means
our... yes,
one thing and one thing only.
All right.
That means we are going to have a kickin' Patreon later on tonight.
Oh my God. You all need to go to ronandbrianpodcast.com, click on the Become a Patron up in the upper right corner. Join the Patreon. $5 gets you swag and exclusive content. $10 and higher gets you more swag and access to our exclusive Patreon videos. It's a deal whichever way you cut it, personally.
But most importantly is the content. We are offering on our Patreon, it's where we take our caps off, we loosen our ties a little bit, let our hair down a little bit more, and that's where we relax. We talk about the stories that you may not have seen on the front page, but maybe you saw on the back page.
Yes. So things that kind of fall through the cracks,
right?
Maybe a little bit more wacky, a little bit more sexy at times. We've been calling it Ron and Brian After Dark lately. Mm-hmm. So I highly encourage it. Sure. Do I encourage it because it puts money in our pockets? Yes. But I feel we're giving you your money's worth each and every week.
But the important thing is that the money that is going into it, we are reinvesting into the podcast.
It goes right into the platform.
This is not what's making us rich. Right now, our Patreon is for us to be able to provide ourselves with better quality equipment. Maybe, you know, Ron, you've always talked about building that home studio, you know, that you've always wanted, like Howard Stern has in his residence.
Yes.
And this is not, our Patreon is not to make us wealthy. It is to enable us to provide a better service.
Right. We're not making Joe Rogan money. We just would like to get a few bucks to maybe break even one of these days.
We'll take it. We'll take it.
All right. In the meantime, let's beef it out.
And Brian's Beef of the Week.
All right, Brian, what's bothering you this week, buddy?
These hairs that grow right above the lip line, and if I don't stop them, they curl down into my lip and really fuck with me while I'm eating.
I know where you're going with that.
I literally have to come in. I got to come in with a little electric shape, a little and come across just so that they're hitting that point, especially on the sides where they're starting to encroach into the lip area. And it's really bothering me.
I'll go with you there. There are definitely times where I'll like, especially in the morning before I've showered and they're just still a little out of control. Like the ends just really get into the corners of your mouth when you're having coffee. Unpleasant.
Now that we are in this unprecedented times, are you showering at like a set time every day? Like, are you still like showering in the morning when you know before you start your day, or is it more of like I'll farts around the house, do the physically active things, and then I'll shower? Like,
yeah,
what is your routine?
I don't think there's anything standard right now. Like today, we had some movers coming over to move some things around. They were supposed to be here at like 8, so I had like an early morning shower. But yeah, like the other week, you know, when I was putting in garden boxes outside, I was like, I showered right before dinner. If I'm painting, you know, sometimes I'll shower after lunch. So, yeah, nothing. I mean, I am showering daily. So it's not gotten to that point.
Good.
But, yeah, it's not necessarily a set time at this point.
All right.
What's bothering me, you ask?
Ron, what's bothering you?
The people in my county are bothering me. I live in Montgomery County, Pennsylvania, right outside Philadelphia. We were initially what the governor of our state declared the epicenter of COVID-19 early on. Obviously, Philly overtook us afterwards, but we've still had some high numbers. The governor has given us some clearance to potentially move to the yellow phase on June 5th, and people are already starting to act like everything is back to normal. For example, I was driving back from picking up some fabulous beer from Broken Goblet today. Drove by a little garden center that we frequent from time to time. It takes up the corner lot that used to be a gas station, so you can picture how big it is. Had to be 50 people crammed in there. Now, Majority of them had masks. Some did not. But again, no social distancing going on. And we have seen this repeatedly in our county when, you know, people start to get a little bit lax. You know, the cases will start to go down. People are like, oh, we're fine now. They'll go back out, go to the fields, go to the parks, go to whatever. And then we see a rise again. So I feel like they're just going to fuck this up for us again and keep us from reopening.
I had a thought earlier today as to one of the issues that's happening, which is the use of the word reopening, I think, is creating a false impression of what phase one in the return to open society is. Phase one is the most basic of services that are being provided to us. There is a stay-at-home order in place. There are, and I can only speak for New York State. Obviously, you're more familiar with Pennsylvania, but there's phase one, which is construction, retail, curbside, but you're not allowed in store, things like that. And then as the numbers progressively improve, we go to phase two, phase three, and four. In theory, phase four will be there's no more restrictions on what we can and cannot do, but we'll probably still have to wear masks and socially distance. People are hearing the word reopening, which, and what they're thinking is, oh, we can now go back to the way it was back in February. And that is not what phase one is supposed to be. Phase one is, okay, we're going to start opening things a little bit, you know, kind of like, the Bible study girl on prom night, like, you know, like she'll open somewhat, but you're not going to get the home base. Like, this is the beginnings of our reintroduction of society. So like, we're supposed to be doing it slowly. And I think by using the term, you know, we're ready to be reopened, it's giving people a or B, 1-0, black, white, you know, this duality, when really there are, you know, it is a phased in approach. And I think that's one of the problems that we're facing, is that people are just kind of are misunderstanding this process, and it's just being like, oh, we're reopened, so we can go back and do whatever we want.
Right.
And even that's my rant.
I know, I agree with you. I mean, as far as Pennsylvania goes, you know, moving to yellow doesn't change a lot. I mean, the stay at home order is lifted, but you know, it's still social gatherings are limited. You know, places you can go to are still limited. Some retail can open at 50% of volume as far as bodies in the store, but still pushing the curbside and pushing delivery. You know, but there is still, again, there's a number of retail that has said, we will not open during yellow. We will remain closed. Even going to green, you know, that's when restaurants start to reopen, but again, you know, capped at a 50% maximum occupancy. So even going to the green zone doesn't mean that things are yet back to normal. The green zone is the step, you know, that we take to then remove all zones and try and get life back to as much normal as possible. But the yellow zone, yellow zone, construction, things like that. But as far as the average person goes, it doesn't change
elective
a hell of a lot.
Surgeries.
Right.
Yeah, elective surgeries is like that next. And I think people are like, oh, well, fuck it. Let's just do whatever we want.
Yeah, it's
it's a legitimate beef.
I'm worried. So we'll see what happens. Understood. We'll definitely see what happens. So we do have a very special episode this week. We have a guest that is going to join us. We are going to attempt to bring him in on this Zoom call here. We will see how well I am able to use the Zoom. So if we can at this point introduce the senior news correspondent for the Ron and Brian podcast, Scott Kingsley, coming to us from upstate New York. Scott, how are you doing this fine Tuesday evening?
I am doing very well, Ron.
All right, fantastic.
Glad to be on board.
All right, good to hear you.
I miss that voice. I miss that voice so much.
From those of you that know a little bit of our past, Scott was our news guy back on the radio show, the Ron and Brian show. We had him on. If you go back and listen to the Ron and Brian 25th anniversary special, you can hear Scott in hours 1 and 2. He is kind of the, I guess, would you say kind of the conservative counterpoint to our more liberal point?
Here is point counterpoint.
So we are bringing him on. We are bringing him on to get his thoughts on some stories, some things that are going on in upstate New York. Talk about the pandemic, reopening, all that good stuff. We did bring you in before we ran through all of our weekly bits. We can give you some feedback on this as well. This is a little weekly thing we do called This Week in Racism.
This week.
Racism.
So we, for those who might be first-time listeners, and for Scott, what we do each week is we like to point out some of the more racist people that have made themselves known over the past week, put them up against each other, and compete for who might be the best racist of the year. Was a little quiet these past few weeks with people being forced to stay at home, but as we had hoped, the Memorial Day weekend brought people out and about. And racism was hot and heavy. We did have a woman that verbally attacked a group of Puerto Ricans in a park, yelling at them for playing Mexican music. We've got a little clip here.
And you have unfortunately, I know, senor.
The manager is not today. The manager is not today.
By calling the Mexican.
So we thought about using that as our candidate. Oh, I even forgot, Brian, you wanted me to play a little Slayer for this. So that's a little Slayer, guilty of being white. We were going to speak about Amy Cooper and perhaps have her be our candidate. She's been all the rage the last 24 to 36 hours. But we feel that the internet really took care of some justice with her. So we are actually in a very rare move for a lot of you loyal listeners. You know, it's rare that we have a non-audio contender, but we have that this week, going all the way out to San Leandro, California. A woman is accused of penning racist letters targeting Asian Americans, asking them to move out of one suburb. Nancy Arachiga, 52, allegedly left at least 5 of the handwritten letters on homes and other locations in San Leandro, which is a suburb of Oakland. In one letter, Arachiga wrote to foreign-born residents saying, quote, "You, because we consider you're a stranger, one bad person for this country, leave, go far away, go back to your country, the place you belong. You have until the day, May 23rd, 2020, Saturday, 10:30 a.m., to leave this country, place, no Asian allowed, my country, USA." Obviously, this woman benefited from her schooling here in this country. One resident who only wanted to be identified as Trin said her family found a letter both at their home and a nearby park. Footage from a Ring doorbell camera allegedly caught Arachiga posting one of the notes on a home. Within hours, police located her still in the area with a backpack that contained more letters. Arachiga was arrested and booked into Alameda County's Santa Rita Jail in Dublin. So very racist, obviously very angry with the Asian American population. Brian, your thoughts on her as a contender?
Do we have any understanding as to why she set 10:30 in the morning on Saturday as the time that she wanted the Asian families to move out of the neighborhood? Like, wouldn't you think that, you know, I mean, I know that she's a flaming racist.
Right.
I know that her thoughts are not necessarily crystal clear in terms of logic and thought process, but wouldn't you think that if you're gonna kick somebody out of their homes, maybe you do it later on in the day, like maybe give her a 3 o'clock in the afternoon deadline? Like 10:30 in the morning seems rather early to have somebody evacuate their entire homes.
Listen, my thought, maybe she was planning like a family luncheon, like she had like a noon start time. She said, "I'm going to need at least 90 minutes to clean the neighborhood up of the Chinese virus once I get all of the Asian Americans out of my area. So that is my
understood.
Thought. Yeah. But okay, regardless,
understood.
See, I have a different. I have a different take on that.
Scott, we would love to hear your take
on it. Bring it on. Scott Kingsley, bring it on. 10:30
a.m. I think that this person is such a racist that they decided to use their time back in midnight, their time back in Asia,
ooh,
to set a deadline here in the U.S.
That is, that's very possible. I like that. Brian, you think that's a possibility?
That works for me. I'm all not right, going to lie.
I mean, she might have used that world clock on her iPhone and said, hey, this is going to work for me.
I see logic there.
All right. Well, she will be going up against our defending champs of Freeman and Hume. Very tough competition. They were extremely racist filming their TikTok. Brian, as always, I throw it to you for a prediction.
Listen, I think, you know, high school students are bringing a certain level of racism, I think, consistently. This is a they are a tough demographic to beat. We know that they have shown that they are the darlings of the voting bloc, the type of person that sits there and says, I'm going to vote on a current events podcast This Week in Racism poll. As despicable as this human's behavior is, I don't think she's got it, in the bag, pardon the pun. I think the high school students take on another week here.
All right. Well, as always, listeners, you decide who moves on. Go to ronandbrianpodcast.com. That will give you the links to our Facebook and our Twitter pages. The polls will be up there. You can vote prior to next week's episode. We did have, again, we mentioned Amy Cooper at the top of the episode. She has been all over the news. I don't think there's anyone who hasn't heard about her. She was in Central Park. In the Ramble, her dog was off her leash. There was an African-American gentleman, Christian Cooper, who asked her to put her dog back on the leash. Apparently, he is an avid birder, and there are a lot of birds in the Ramble. So he was a little concerned about that. And of course, she responded, as many white women do.
Please don't come close to me.
Sir, I'm asking you to stop recording me.
Please don't come close to me.
Please take your phone off.
Please don't come close to me.
I'm taking a picture and calling the cops.
Please call the cops. Please call the cops.
I'm going to tell them there's an African-American man threatening my life.
Please tell them whatever you like.
I'm sorry, I'm in the Ramble, and there is a man, African-American, he has a bicycle helmet. He is recording me and threatening me and my dog. There is an African-American man, I am in Central Park, he is recording me and threatening myself and my dog. I'm sorry, I can't hear you either. I'm being threatened by a man in the Ramble. Please send the cops immediately. I'm in Central Park in the Ramble. I don't know.
Thank you.
So a lot of things have happened since this video broke. First of all, she was worried about her dog, saying he was threatening her dog. You heard the dog cry out because she was basically choking out the dog by the leash. The internet went to work pretty quickly on her. Within a couple of hours, had her name, had her place of employment, also had located the rescue that she had adopted her dog from. In addition, they found an Instagram page she had created for her dog and noticed that her dog had a history of quote-unquote accidents that required the dog to go to the vet multiple times. So by the end of last night, the dog had been returned to the rescue organization. Her employer, Franklin Templeton, had placed her on an administrative leave. Moving to today, she has been fired from Franklin Templeton, and now people are pushing to Mayor de Blasio to ask her to be permanently banned from Central Park. Scott, you're joining us this week. I assume you have seen this story up where you are.
I have. The woman definitely has some issues.
So do you feel the internet went a little overboard, or do you feel the punishment fits the crime, so to speak?
Well, I always feel the internet goes overboard. You know, I don't think necessarily she should have been fired from her job, but the public embarrassment probably does make most normal people feel good.
Brian, you actually showed some compassion. I was willing to throw Amy out there as our contender for this week in racism, and you said, whoa, hold up, Ron. The world has really crapped on this poor woman enough. Do we need to pile on? Rare coming from you. Why did you feel that way?
Twofold. One was the fact that I felt that, first off, I have a genuine issue with this woman being fired from her job for behavior that she conducted outside of the workplace.
Okay.
I understand that, you know, that it does not put her employer, Franklin Templeton, in a good light. I imagine it will make operations involving, what was she? She was like the head of like some kind of investment insurance group or something along those lines.
I believe so, yes.
It went right over my head. I don't understand that Wall Street language. But I imagine it will make somewhat difficult her ability to work with minorities and whatnot. But I just feel like the behavior that one exhibits in their personal life, I believe, should be separated from their professional career. Scott has a job. Scott works. Scott's behavior while he's working, I believe, should have an impact on his employer's decision to keep him as an employee or not. But what Scott does on a Saturday night while hanging out with his friends, I believe that should not in any way have an impact on whether Scott Holt keeps his job or not. I feel very strongly that there's got to be a separation between what you do as an employee and your personal life. Additionally, and this is where I wasn't aware of the accidents that her dog had had that many times. It just felt wrong that, within hours of her having this tirade in a New York City park, that suddenly she has to surrender her dog. I just felt that was, and then obviously afterwards, I watched the video again and I saw her yank on the dog. And then you pointed out to me that the internet had discovered all the multiple accidents her dog had gotten into. And there was questions about the dog's welfare.
Sure. And I, I will go as far as to say that, it is very possible that the dog could have had accidents. One was a case of the dog actually having a nail yanked out somehow and had to wear a boot for a while. Another, the dog almost drowned. And then a third time, the dog was attacked by another dog. So, again, I'm willing to accept the fact that maybe these were three unfortunate incidents. But if that's the case, I would think that's even more of an argument for you not to have this dog off leash in public. If you have already had to go to the vet three times for two of them potentially life-threatening episodes with your animal, don't let the dog run free, plain and simple. So she has, she's apologized.
Understood.
And I agree with you to a point where people should only be judged by what happens in the workplace. But when you work for a company that relies on business from the general public, and then you get a growing sentiment from the general public that they may not do business with you because they're judging you based on the character of the employees you hire, what's a company to do at that point?
So you would be okay getting fired if your boss says, hey, I was listening to this podcast and we don't agree with the fact that you play audio clips of racists using the N-word.
I think that would be a little bit different. I mean, I would understand it. I would not agree with it, but I would understand it. Certainly.
I would be livid.
Because
I would be livid.
Here's the thing. Actions have repercussions, regardless of whether you do them in the workplace or whether you do them in your personal life. And you don't have to agree with it.
So how would you feel?
But you have to understand that companies operate on a different wavelength.
How would you feel if your mortgage company and I know you just refinanced. How would you like it if your mortgage company said to you, hey, we just found out that you do a podcast and we don't like the content of it. Therefore, we are calling your loan in now. You need to pay us the balance by Friday. Otherwise, we will start eviction and what do they call that? What's the word I'm thinking of?
Foreclosure.
Yeah, and I had a good point. Yeah, that's it.
Foreclosure.
I feel that's a little bit different. I feel that's
how.
You know, because
okay,
that,
you're drawing
that
a line.
I don't know that I'm drawing a line between a company that employs me and a company that I do business with. You know, there's always that argument. You know, should they be forced to do business with me? No. I mean, if I went to them to do a refinance and they didn't want to do business with me because they don't agree with the podcast, then fine. That's one thing. If I already have a signed contract with them and they are breaking that contract for no reason other than the fact that they don't like something I say, then that's a little bit different. I don't think it's apples to apples. Scott, what's your thoughts?
You don't feel that your offer letter is a contract. You don't feel like your employee handbook, which states the behavior.
Listen.
Within that, it's all employment related. Nowhere does it say we also get to control how you behave outside the office.
Pennsylvania is an at-will state, and they can fire us for any reason whatsoever. And that's
Scott,
you know, that's just the life. That's just how it goes.
Scott, you represent upper management in your place of work. What are your thoughts about the way that, what was her name, Amy Cooper?
Amy Cooper.
Yeah. What are your thoughts about Amy Cooper's employer terminating her within, what was it, 36 hours of this incident coming
to light? It was quick.
We would certainly get our HR department involved. We would have a discussion about it, anything that's of public nature. Whether or not the person was arrested and or publicly was put in the newspaper would all be taken into consideration. But if the person can't do their job because of the notoriety, say they're like the public face of a store or the company, say where they were the pitchman, yeah, there's a place where I think you might have to let someone go. But if they're not the face of the company and they're doing clerical work, I think, you know, as a society, calling for people to be fired left and right is like the lynchings of today. Just society wanting to punish this person to feel good about themselves. And I don't think, and I agree with Brian on this point, if this person can do their job and their notoriety is not affecting them doing their job, they should be allowed to make a living.
All right, fair enough. One thing that has also come out that people seem to be interested with for some reason is that apparently Amy Cooper is a liberal. She apparently donated to Mayor Buttigieg's campaign, but it's led to this additional conversation that, you know, the route some people started to take is they see this woman, they see her behavior towards an African-American man, her attempting to almost weaponize the police department, as it seemed. And people's thoughts were, oh, you know, here's another MAGA hat wearing Trump supporter. And then it turns out that, you know, she's a liberal. And, you know, I think what people really need to, you know, what people are surprised is that there is racism on the liberal spectrum just as much as there is racism on the conservative spectrum. It didn't surprise me to see that she was a liberal. Does it surprise either of you to see that she was a liberal?
Not at all. She actually looked like a liberal. I hate to say it, but if you're talking about somebody who's walking their dog in Central Park, you're talking about somebody that wants to live in the middle of Manhattan, demographically speaking. That is not a Republican conservative stronghold.
No.
I mean, nowhere near like Saratoga County.
I mean, Scott, were you surprised when I tell you that? I mean, I don't feel that racism is exclusive to any political party.
Or skin color.
They're assholes in every treehouse.
Right.
Every group. Every group has racists in it. Every group has bigots in it. Every group has homophobes in it. It's just a microcosm of human nature.
And I think if there's a difference, you know, I think the difference is that maybe it's quieter on the liberal side than it is on the conservative side. You know, and You know, and Martin Luther King Jr. actually touched on that in his letter from Birmingham jail, where, you know, he felt that, you know, quiet, you know, people that just didn't say anything but still had those feelings in their hearts were worse than the people that were outwardly racist. Is that at least someone who is outwardly racist, you know where they stand, versus a group of people that are quiet and still inflict their racist views on society somehow.
That's very reasonable. That's a very reasonable comment. You know, I think, you know, it is, I want to use the word refreshing, even though I think it's a terrible word to use in light of the conversation we're having. But I think it is refreshing to acknowledge that racism is not part of the political spectrum. You know, it's not slided on one space or another. There are racist liberals and there are racist conservatives. You know, they're probably more racist conservatives, but you know, it's not an exclusive all or nothing.
No.
And I'm surprised. And if I can point out to you, I'm also surprised that you have not addressed the Minnesota Minneapolis police.
Well, we were going to move to that next. Obviously, I think a lot of people, again, also have seen the video of a Minneapolis police officer with his knee pinned on the neck of a handcuffed black man who was later identified to be George Floyd. I believe the video showed that he had the knee in the back of his neck for probably a good 6 minutes. He was calling out.
Oh, it was over 10.
Was it over 10?
It was 10 minutes that he had his knee on the back of the guy's neck.
And for a period of time, you know, the suspect, Mr. Floyd, was yelling that he can't breathe. I can't breathe. You know, shades of Eric Garner, the situation you had there in New York a few years back. He then became unresponsive. Paramedics came on the scene. They loaded him very roughly on a gurney and were not able to resuscitate him. And surprisingly, a few hours ago, we learned that four of the Minneapolis cops involved in that fatality were fired, which, again, you don't, when you get the police and the police union involved, you typically don't see a reaction as quick as that. But I think the video and the outrage that stemmed from that video just really spread like wildfire across the internet.
I actually thought that was going to be our racism of the week.
It was close, but again, you know, people are being brought to justice. Scott, what's your thoughts on this?
My thought is the let the justice system go to work, and the cops should be punished.
All right.
Do you think the cops should have killed this guy?
No police should kill anybody at any time unless it's in a you know, where they feel that their lives, a reasonable person could feel that their lives are in danger.
I find that interesting you posted that because on Facebook on February 23rd, 2013, you posted Blue Lives Matter. Yet somehow today you are going to try to put limitations on the power of the nation's police force.
I don't think the two of them are exclusive.
So would you say...
I'll accept that.
Would you say Black Lives Matter or All Lives Matter?
All Lives Matter.
All right. Now, again, I think a lot of people... Okay, sorry, I don't want to cut you off,
Scott.
Well,
he said but. I want to hear the qualifier. Right. What is the but?
Well, the but means I was going to go off the topic just a tad.
No, go right ahead.
Roll with it.
I have my own write-in candidate for Racist of the Week.
Oh, all right. We would love to hear it.
Would you? Yes, I believe my write-in candidate for Racist of the Week is our former Vice President Joe Biden.
Okay.
Who told a prominent radio host, Sean LeMay, if you're not with me, you ain't black. What's more racist than saying, hey, you guys can't have a thought of your own. You have to be part of the collective. And if you're not, you're disassociated from the group. That's inherently racist.
I mean, is all right. So is that better or worse than Donald Trump telling Jews that they aren't really Jews if they don't vote for him because he looks out for their best interests.
Now listen, we all know what Donald Trump is. He's been this way for 35 years. I won't defend the president when he makes stupid ass comments like this.
Okay, so you don't. So Joe Biden, we can't just say that was a stupid ass comment. Let's move on.
I actually think it was a racist comment. If you're gonna call Donald Trump out, then you need to call Joe Biden out.
Oh, absolutely.
That's fair.
Because 100%. It's the thought is that this group is ours. And you can't stray from that. And if you do, then you're disassociated with the group. It's like saying all Italians have to vote this way. All Irishmen have to vote this way. All gays have to vote this way. Well, it's just not true. And for me, in my brand of conservatism, I'm about the individual. And I let the individual making their own mind up, being a free person, and deciding what's best for them and their family.
Well, again, I think Biden feels the need to pander to the African-American vote, because that was obviously a demographic that Hillary Clinton was not as successful with in 2016 as Barack Obama had been in 2008 and 2012, and that didn't help her case. It certainly wasn't the smartest thing of him to say.
I
would say this. It wasn't necessarily the African-American vote that Hillary Clinton had problems with. She had problems across the board. She was a bad candidate. She lost because she was a bad candidate. People didn't like her. I will tell you, and I said this 4 or 5 years ago, if Joe Biden had run in 2012, he would have been the nominee. Not 2012, 2016. He would have been the nominee. He would have beaten Clinton in the primaries, and he would have beaten Trump. 4 years later, he's older, he's lost a step, and I think it's going to be a very tight race.
So when we last had you on a couple years back, a little over 2 years ago, for our anniversary show there at WCDB, I remember we talked about the primaries, we talked about the 2016 election, and you had mentioned that you struggled with your vote during the primaries and leading up to the general election. Given everything that has happened so far during the Trump presidency, where do you find yourself leading up to November of this year?
Still the same struggle that I had two and a half years ago. You know, the policies versus the person, it's a fine line. It really is. You know, as I said before, back on the 25th anniversary special, that, you know, my dislike for the president, it goes back 35 years. And it goes back to the USFL days with the New Jersey Generals. But I like the conservative judges. I like some of the policies he's putting forth. But I don't like the man. So what do you vote for? Do you vote for the policies or the person? That's a tough call, and I can't blame anyone for making a decision either way on that spectrum.
So what would it take for you not to be able to support Donald Trump come November?
Oh, well, I live in New York, so it really doesn't matter what I do. You know, you'd really have to go off the deep end. Not to vote for him.
So Scott, what if it comes out that your candidate, the person you're thinking about voting for, what if it comes out that he paid a adult film star $130,000 to not talk about a sexual affair he had with her while his wife was pregnant with his son? Now, would that be something that would make you sit there and say, maybe this man doesn't really speak the values that I agree with?
Well, you know what? I was told in 1999 that my my values don't have any place in American politics. So,
who told you that?
The American people told me that.
I hope the answer's not me. Oh, I thought you were going to say that. No, I told you one day on the radio, and I got very nervous.
No. Very nervous. No, with Clinton's acquittal, that private, you know, those kind of private things don't mean anything. So, you know what? Let's use the Clinton doctrine when it comes to President Trump.
But the difference being is that the Democrats and the liberals don't cling to family values the way that the conservatives do. Is that, and I'm not saying that liberals are all orgiastic, self-centered maniacs where all they care about is sex, drugs, and rock and roll. We do, by the way, but don't hold that against us. But it's the fact that the people that are voting for Donald Trump, the values that they identify with, that they use to identify themselves through, they are holding up as this representative, somebody who clearly lives a life in contrast to the life that they are promoting. The man, we'll take it a step further. The fundamental Christians have embraced this man with a fervor that I have not seen since, maybe Reagan?
Yeah, I think Reagan was probably the one who was in bed with the evangelicals as much as Trump at this point.
And yet you've got the real, the fundamental Christians who are being quoted as saying that Donald Trump is the biggest defender of Christ in this country. Yet there's no evidence of this man showing any signs of a religious life up until he becomes elected president and suddenly is embraced by the fundamentalists. Like, I mean, there's this classic video that's out on the internet of Fox News. I forgot which, I'm going to say Shepard Smith. I don't know. But we'll call him Shepard Smith, you know, is a fictitious character. Asking Donald Trump what his favorite Bible verse is. And Trump literally stammers, sidesteps again, and then comes back with an answer of, oh, I like all of them. The whole book is my favorite.
Politicians pander. News at 6 and 11.
Right, but I guess the thing is that, you know, Donald Trump campaigned on draining the swamp, campaigned on not politics as usual, but wouldn't you agree that his administration has been politics as usual as far as donors getting, you know, preferred contracts, you know, nepotism, you know, people in his circle profiting off the presidency? Do you see anything different from his administration than we have from the past however many presidential administrations we've lived through?
I can't disagree with that.
Okay. I got another question here for you.
The swamp will take more than 4 years to drain.
Well,
But what has he done to drain it whatsoever, other than replace his people in the swamp with the Democrats that were existing in the swamp for the previous 8 years?
Well, I don't think this president has had a chance to do anything, really. He's been, you know, he's been attacked. He's been cornered. He's been sued for everything he's tried to do.
Are you, when you say sued, are you referring to Trump University or Trump Stakes?
You have to determine which lawsuit you're talking about.
Regarding to the emoluments clauses in the Constitution, where he's continuing to profit off of his presidency, or
Hold on a second, before you answer, Scott. Yeah. I genuinely don't want you to feel like we are attacking you, because we're absolutely not. Ron is what I would say is a self. You're a liberal. Would you agree
leaning
with that?
Liberal. I'm a moderate that leans liberal.
I am okay. I would describe myself as a moderately liberal leaning libertarian. What neither of us can understand, and one of the things why we got excited about having you on the show, was we want to understand somebody who is likely going to go into that voting booth. And if there's any justice on earth, we can all do a mail-in ballot in November, because there is a global pandemic endangering all of our lives. So let's hope, pray, fingers crossed, let's pray that we can get a the approval for a mail-in ballot during the general election. But what is the mindset of somebody who has values and has lived a life based on those values that will cause them to walk into that voting booth and vote for Donald Trump?
I think it's a mindset that no one feel like that no one's speaking for them, you know, and whether it's, if you believe it's full of crap or not, the people believe that Donald Trump speaks for them. And, you know, that's his appeal. And I think as our politics get more personal and it gets more polarized, it's no longer about the battle of ideas. It's about the left hating the right and the right hating the left. And it's not just wanting to beat him at the ballot box. You know, it's more than that. It goes back to the prior conversation about getting people fired for their jobs. It's about punishing these people. It's a real serious thing that's going on. People are deciding what states to live in based on whether it's a blue state or a red state.
Can I take it a step further? And I'm not trying to hijack the conversation, but you're talking about how we have become so divided as a country. How, as a conservative, and I don't mean that as an insult, as a conservative, how are you viewing the coronavirus pandemic and the effect that it has had in America in terms of dividing along political lines?
It is a very interesting thing to watch. Those on the right that have Democratic governors are, you know, feel like they don't have their best interests at heart just because they're Democratic governors. Those on the left that have Republican governors think, you know, just because a Republican governor, he just wants us to die. It's a serious situation, but I think that it's time to start reopening, but doing it in a very, very cautious and careful way. You know, I give our governor here in New York, Andrew Cuomo, a solid B on how he's handling it. I think now his daily press conferences are silly. It's more personal anecdotes than it is actual information. I think at this point, it's about him trying to keep himself relevant. But I think the regional phases make sense. 2 weeks at a time, see where the numbers are. He made the mistake with the nursing homes early on. And I think he's starting to own up to that. But we all have to take a look and say, you know, in January, none of us saw this coming. We haven't had to face this as a society in a long time. So, you know, I've got to give all the politicians, you know, some level of benefit of the doubt when it comes to managing this, because no one has managed this before on such a scale.
No, but we know that this is a natural phenomenon that occurs on a regular basis. I mean, if you go back 5 years, you can see virologists and epidemiologists talking about how we were overdue for our next pandemic. And yet you find ourselves, and there's blame on, you know, as you're going to point out, there's blame on, you know, all sides of the political spectrum. And the, you know, we're attacking Trump for, Ron, you're going to have to step in here because I know you have the facts, but we're blaming Trump for gutting the National Institute of Health.
Listen, there's yeah, I mean, the National Institute of Health, the pandemic response. I mean, there definitely was failings response. On a federal level. What is interesting to me there in New York, and to hear you, Scott, give Governor Cuomo a B, and I will agree, he's been very effective in handling the pandemic. But it has been amazing to me to see the change in perception about Governor Cuomo due to his handling of this event. Because if you ask my personal opinion, there's not a lot of difference between Donald Trump and Andrew Cuomo. They both run their administrations in a very similar way. They're all about loyalty. They're all about punishing people that go against them. I mean, shit, Andrew Cuomo dissolved the committee that was supposed to be looking into improprieties of the Cuomo administration. So, but now he comes out and he gives some good press conferences and he talks about his daughters and the daughter's boyfriend and does this and that. And all of a sudden people are like, hey, maybe Andrew Cuomo should be president. No. If Andrew Cuomo was president, you would see the same things that you are seeing from Donald Trump. I believe that 100%.
I think Cuomo did one thing that was incredibly important, which was he provided stability and when we needed it the most. Much like Giuliani right after 9/11, mm-hmm. when Giuliani got up there and when he spoke about what we were going to do, how we were going to survive, how we were going to move forward, he made us all sit there and say, okay, let's not panic.
Right.
Donald Rumsfeld, please do not cut me off, Ron. I've let you talk for a majority of this hour. Please allow me to speak. But Donald Rumsfeld, when he was giving his briefings in the Pentagon, a building that was partly demolished as a result of a hypothetical plane slamming into the Pentagon. I challenge you to show me videotape of that. Where's the plane? But Rumsfeld sold calm to the American public when, in that period of time post 9/11, we were all sitting there saying, oh my God, I don't know if I can live in a world where I have to fear this. And Rumsfeld got up there and he made you feel better. I think that Trump's press conferences had the opposite effect. I think that they were so disjointed, off message in the sense of there being no message, that I think it provided Cuomo as the governor of the state which was suffering the most. I mean, we've all seen the videos of the refrigerated trucks in New York City packed, filled with bodies that were being stored only because the morgues had been were overflowing with dead bodies, victims of the coronavirus, that I think that Cuomo was just in the right place at the right time with the right style of message. That doesn't mean he should be president. It just means that as a New Yorker, somebody who woke up in the morning, the last week of March, wondering, how are we going to live like this? Will I be able to feed myself? Will I be able to get medical care if I need to? He sold calm. He sold an idea of essential services will continue unobstructed. We are going to figure this out. We will get through this, which is, I think, what we needed to hear at the time. All right, Ron, now you may cut me off.
I just wanted to take, before we run too long here, I did want to ask Scott a couple more questions since he was kind enough to join us on the cast this week. So first off, I hope you and your family have been okay during this pandemic.
Yes, we are fine. We've been very socially distant. Saw my parents on Memorial Day for the first time in 3 months. Same with my sister and brother. We were able to at least have our chairs out in the backyard, so far apart from each other. But we were able to spend a little time together. Family as well. Thank you.
Right. Now, have you continued to work during this pandemic?
I have. Okay. And, you know, I feel very fortunate about that, being in the supermarket business. We were all labeled essential employees. And business is good. And partly because everybody's staying home, so they're eating, you know, eating out less, eating home more, which is good for my business. And just been very thankful in that regard, because I know there is a lot of people struggling out there.
Right, and I will say, people like Scott, other workers in the food store world, you know, really are essential workers and really deserve a lot of accolades for being out there in the front lines. I mean, the public is horrible to deal with on a normal day, even worse during a pandemic. But the question I have for you, Scott, is seeing what is going on in the world, what's going on in the economy, what's going on in your industry, and coming from kind of a conservative angle that you do, are there any policy issues that you have changed your mind on based on the last few months? I'm looking at like unemployment, healthcare tied to your employer, a $15 minimum wage. Has what you've seen in the last 90 days caused you to reevaluate any of your positions on some of these national issues?
Not as of yet. I mean, we're still kind of in the middle of this. I think we need to see where we are when you know, the pandemic is, for the most part, passed us by and we see what the aftermath truly is. I really do think we ought to take a look at our small businessmen, because they're the backbone of the economy. The big boys are going to survive. They're going to survive a lot of stuff because they're the big boys. You know, the small businesses, the entrepreneurs, somebody that spent 15 years putting a small business together, maybe 5-6 employees, you know, they're gone. They're gone, closed up. 15 years worth of work, blood, sweat, and tears. It, you know, just business destroyed. And so I think we really got to take a look at how we really treat our small business people. I really feel bad for the seniors this year, those are graduating from college and high school, you know, especially the high school students.
Excuse me. I thought you were talking about the senior citizens that were dying from unprecedented levels of death due to the coronavirus. I did not think you meant the high school seniors who are being robbed of the ability to sit in an auditorium for 3 hours in a gown, meaning for the opportunity to hear their name read aloud. I apologize. I misunderstood where you were heading with that, Scott.
So, you know, I think we got to take a look at everything. You know, I do think a conservative approach, a free market approach, is the best way to go. We as conservatives, we do not deny that a social safety net is necessary, but where that social safety net is created and managed, I think that's up for debate. Whether the one size fits all policy from Washington can better take care of things than things that are managed at the local level.
May I ask you a question based on that comment, Scott, which is,
yeah.
The overall comment question is, how would you grade the federal government's approach to sustaining the economy as a result of the outbreak of this epidemic? Specifically, what are your, you know, as you profess to support for the free market, what are your thoughts in regards to the fact of the government pumping trillions and trillions of dollars that everyone said we did not have for healthcare, pumping the same dollar amounts, in fact, more dollars into supporting businesses while offering $1,200 checks to individuals? Is that or is that not corporate welfare? And I'm asking you for your opinion.
It feels
painfully hypocritical that the people that are benefiting the most from this corporate welfare are the ones who are going to sit there and say, we need a free market and we need to let capitalism do what it does. That is what has gotten us here. But heaven forbid we hit a little bump in the road and the federal government better pump trillions of dollars into supporting countries. I mean, had you listened to previous episodes, you would have heard me, but I will repeat, the fact that the government is going to give billions of dollars to the cruise industry, an industry where they are using foreign boats because they do not want to adhere to American safety standards, so that they are going to use foreign flag boats for a cruise industry, something literally the very definition of leisure, that is going to get billions of dollars of American taxpayer money. But to support food banks, to support individuals who are struggling to feed their families, a one-time check of $1,200 is a it's a fucking slap in the face from somebody claiming that they support a free market. And I'm not talking about you personally. You don't have to defend yourself. It's offensive to me.
You know, I think it's the best thing that it's the best option the government could do at this moment of time. To avoid a total economic collapse and prime the pump. Like all programs that are written hastily in an emergency situation, we see all kinds of 2008, 2009, we saw all kinds of problems and waste in the the bank bailout. But there was a difference, though. I think that the bank bailout in 2008 and 2009 was worse because those banks failed on their own.
Yes,
their own stupidity.
Absolutely.
Okay. The small businesses here didn't do anything.
No.
You know, it wasn't their fault. The government just shut them down. Rightly or wrongly. I'm not criticizing them being shut down. What I'm saying is it wasn't their action.
Correct.
So let me ask you this. Why is a country like Canada able to give their residents, their citizens, $2,000 a month during this period, and we're only able to give $1,200 one time to a certain segment of the population?
Yeah, but that's $2,000 is equivalent to $1.86 in trading stamps.
Hold
but
on
still,
a second.
$2,000 per month takes the rent equation off the table for a number of people, whereas $1,200, and you take someone like Brian, who then gets a third of it seized by the federal government. I mean, you know, what's a man like Brian supposed to do?
Here's the answer. It's the fact that it is a philosophical approach. It's the fact that the Canadian government, the European countries, they are giving the money directly to the citizens, and they are allowing their citizens to fund the economy. The American government is funding corporations, expecting that money to trickle down to benefit the actual citizens. And the problem is the fact that you've got corporations that are going to siphon off money for the betterment of their organizations so that there will be less and less as it trickles down to the average person on the street. Whereas in Canada, they're saying, we're not going to support the corporations as much. We're going to give the money to our citizens and let them decide how they're going to spend. Fuck, I've had three beers and it's already kicking in. But God, I am sorry to rant about corporations, but it is a philosophical issue that we have, which is that our government, democratic as much, Obama's administration came in and fucking hugged Wall Street and literally spread their butt cheeks apart and gave them a kiss, because heaven forbid Wall Street does not have any problems with operating capital. But we love our corporations, we support them all as much. And our mindset, and we've had it ever since Reagan, is let's support the big and it's going to help out the little, instead of let's help out the little and that will support the big. And there's no, it seems to not have any middle ground. I'm sorry, guys. I apologize.
That's all right. I enjoy when you go off on your rants. All right. Before we run too long here, Scott, I have one more question for you, hoping you can help me out with this. Where is Mike Pence? He's been MIA since his press secretary tested positive for the coronavirus. He has not been seen for the last couple of weeks.
Well, I don't know. I've seen him on TV every day. So we must be watching different channels.
You're watching that fake news again.
And I'm assuming we are.
Listen, I watch. The only thing I don't watch is OAN. That is just absolute dreck. I will watch Fox News. I will not watch MSNBC. That's absolute drivel.
Awesome.
I can watch CNN as long as I've got a drink in my hand. I mean, that's the thing, is like, media in this country is screwed. healthcare is screwed. Like, there are so many levels, and that's the main thing I think that this pandemic has shown, is how fragile our entire society is on so many levels, from healthcare to unemployment to the food chain to, you know, to media to politics. We are in rough shape in so many ways. And, you know, I will go into the voting booth in November. I will hold my nose. I will probably vote Biden. But I will tell you this. I have not been happy with being able to vote since probably 2008. I will admit, I bought into the whole Obama rhetoric back in 2008.
Yes, me too.
2012, I was like, well, I got the wool pulled over my eyes in 2008, but what am I going to vote for? Fucking Mitt Romney? No, I'm not going to do that. Hillary Clinton, I was like, well, she's on the Democratic side of the ticket. Like, it was. So what is frustrating for me is that
for me
is it is a continuous year after year, election day after election day, of people that I cannot get excited over voting for. Locally, I can. We've got some great local politicians here in Montgomery County and in Philadelphia that I can get behind. But once you jump up to Senate, House of Representatives, White House, it pains me. And I'm not going to put words in your mouth, Scott, but when was the last time you were truly excited in placing a vote for a presidential candidate?
You know, I really liked Mitt Romney. You know, I was very proud to vote for him in 2012. I think he would have been a really outstanding president. I don't think he would have been a polarizing president. I think he would have been a lot like his father, which is why he never got the Republican nomination. I'm talking about George Romney. And I was happy to vote for McCain in 2008. Supported W in 2004 and 2000. But, you know, I think everybody's looking on the Democratic side for another Obama from a personality standpoint, or another Bill Clinton. Most people on the Republican side are still looking for another Reagan. You have to understand that these kinds of personalities and leaders only come around once every generation. And so you run into a cycle where you get a lot of just non-inspiring people. But they'll be back.
All right.
Reagan's going to be back?
Not Reagan, but a figure like that will inspire a lot of people.
And I will say Trump is
in that group.
I will say this. While I'm not a huge fan of Mitt Romney, I do respect his conviction to stand up against his own party and vote for things that make him very unpopular, because his faith, his morals, his beliefs lead him to. He is not someone that is just going to vote party line. And in this day and age, I respect that tremendously. I don't agree with him on a lot of issues, but I respect the fact that he's willing to take, especially when you have a man like Trump in the White House who will rage tweet against you if you cross him in any way, shape, or form, and send the dogs after you, and CPAC will disinvite you and all this other nonsense. He voted based on his conscience and his beliefs. And if we had a lot more people that operated like that in politics, we'd be a lot better off moving forward.
But don't I agree. You There's think, a time for...
But hold on a second. Don't you think that he's basing his actions and comments on his beliefs because he's not running for president? As in, like, there's the stakes are lower, so that he's not trying to appeal to the masses.
But he's still a politician that needs to be reelected. And the job of any politician is to be reelected. And if you get the RNC and you get the GOP on your bad side, and you've got a primary, and or you've got a strong Democratic contender in an election, that can be a death note for a politician. And he did not look at it that way.
Bashing Trump is not getting him any support in Utah.
Definitely not. No way whatsoever. All right. Well,
all right,
Scott, appreciate you joining. Now, Scott, you mentioned before you would never listen to the podcast. Hopefully that will change.
Yes. Bad Scott.
Scott, this is episode 107. That means you have got 106 to catch up on. But I hope at the very least you will listen to this episode. What are your thoughts now that you have been on the podcast?
Very, very, very enlightening and enjoyable.
All right.
Would you come back? That's a real question. Would you come back?
I would love to, and I'd love to discuss the evils of ballots by mail.
Oh!
We may have to. We'll have you back, no doubt. And I think as we get closer to the election, I think when we get close and we get ready to do the Ron and Brian election special,
yes.
I definitely think we have Scott on. Scott, as a thank you for coming on the podcast today, you get your choice of one of two fabulous parting gifts. Would you prefer either the Ron and Brian podcast baseball cap or the Ron and Brian podcast shot glass?
Oh, we'll take the shot glass.
All right. So we will get that out in the mail to you.
And because I know that you have a lovely wife, we are going to be sending you two shot glasses so that both of you are have something to take your drinks out of.
All right. And
she is a shot glass collector, so she would love that.
There you go.
And she will get a shot glass as well as you.
All right. And of course, for those fans out there that want their own shot glass, just go to ronandbrianpodcast.com, click on the store link. You can find our baseball caps, our stickers, our magnets, our shot glasses, all that good stuff on there. So Scott, thank you once again for joining us. Brian, do you have anything additional this week?
No, absolutely not. It was a pleasure having Scott on board. I really appreciated getting a perspective that is not natural to the way my brain works. I think it added an absolute dynamic to the podcast, and I look forward to having him on again.
All right, sounds good. Well, we are going to roll on out of here. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. As always, head to ronandbrianpodcast.com. Vote for This Week in Racism, rate and review.